beat up by NHTSA, according to reporting. We've also got a new portion of the Elon Musk interview with Tesla owner Silicon Valley. We'll talk about the takeaways from that. News on Giga Berlin, supercharging, and more. A little bit nicer day in the markets today. Tesla finishing up 2.4% to close at $662.67, with the NASDAQ only up 0.2% on the day. So nice outperformance from Tesla, and a nice little green after hours as well. So today, of course, the big macro news was the release of the producer price index. So demand increased 0.8% in May. That was basically in line with expectations, although core PPI, it's called something different there, but it's prices for final demand, less energy, foods, and trade services. That was up 0.5%. So that was actually slightly below expectations. So the market may be seeing a little bit of relief from that, although probably not all that impactful with how close it was to expectations. On a year-over-year basis, you can see the change here. So it looks like maybe the PPI has at least peaked a little bit, with the 10.8% increase for May coming in slightly below the increase that we had seen for April. And then looking at the so-called core PPI, up 8.3% year-over-year versus 8.6% in April. Then, of course, this precedes the big news that we'll have tomorrow, and that will be the Fed interest rate decision, of course, the FOMC statement, and their press conference, which will follow about 30 minutes after that. So the release will be at 2 o'clock, and that's Eastern time, so 2 hours before market close, with the press conference following 30 minutes later. And as we talked about yesterday, the expectation for a 75 basis point increase has increased in terms of that being what the adjustment is. So we can see here CME Group, they make a probability tracking tool. And you can see here 95%, 96% probability for a 75 basis point increase, putting the federal fund target rates at 150 to 175 basis points. So we can see that that has gone up even just from, a day ago, where a 50 basis point increase was 66% probable. So those expectations continue to rise. I'm not sure exactly how accurate their tool is historically, but that was the one that I was able to find out there for probability. So obviously, hopefully a lot of that is priced in, but at this point, who knows? And tomorrow will definitely be an expected to be a volatile day, at least. All right, so kind of the big news that is coming out on Tesla today is that NHTSA is expected to be releasing crash data on ADAS, automated driving assistance systems, accidents. So the AP News here reporting that the government will soon release this data. They say that this is planned to be issued in the coming days. They don't give an exact date, on collisions involving vehicles with autonomous or partially automated driving systems that they say will likely single out Tesla for a disproportionately high number of such crashes. They say that Tesla's figure and its crash rate per 1,000 vehicles was substantially higher than the corresponding numbers for other automakers that provided such data to the Associated Press ahead of NHTSA's release. So as we have talked about with the NHTSA recall engineering analysis stage of the investigation, there were 830 vehicles in that set of investigated vehicles. And NHTSA had found a couple hundred accidents, had eliminated about half of those. There were maybe 100 remaining. So it's not like this is a huge proportion of the vehicles on the road. But what the Associated Press is reporting here is that compared to a company like General Motors with Super Cruise, they've only got 34,000 vehicles, but only 3 crashes reported on Super Cruise. Nissan has 560,000 vehicles using ProPilot Assist, didn't have any crashes to report with that. Fiat Chrysler, 2 crashes with their Blue Cruise, or I guess that's Ford with Blue Cruise, with 0. I'm not sure what Fiat Chrysler's is called, but compared to these other ADAS systems, Tesla reporting more accidents. Now, here's the problem with this, as I'm sure many people are thinking about when they're listening to this. It's not just about the number of crashes per vehicle that happen to have autonomous capabilities. We really should be considering the number of crashes per mile when those capabilities are engaged, and how that compares to what crashes per mile might look like without those systems functioning. So we'll come back to that point, but just to kind of give some context for how those numbers look for Tesla. Tesla, of course, gives us each quarter their autopilot crash statistics. Not that these are perfect statistics by any means. There are definitely holes that we can, nitpick with this data as well, but Tesla does report this every single quarter, and something that's important to keep in mind, as I've seen some discussion around this over the last couple of days, the statistics that Tesla reports here on these crashes, they make sure that they say that they're conservative because they count any crash in which autopilot was deactivated within 5 seconds before impact. So I know in the recall we had seen some where autopilot was deactivated shortly before the accident. It's not like Tesla is just doing that to try to avoid these vehicle, these crashes being reported or anything like that. They're just trying to get the driver to take over. And if you've ever been in a scenario like that, it's going to be beeping at you very loudly telling you to take over immediately. So that's what's going on there. That doesn't mean it's being excluded from any of this crash data. So just to see a quick chart of that and how that's fared over time, the top line here is the million number of miles driven in millions per accident. So Tesla last quarter in Q4, I guess we didn't get Q1 data yet, but when this was last reported for Q4, it was almost 4.5 million miles being driven on autopilot per accident being recorded on autopilot, which is of course a little bit higher than vehicles that are driving without autopilot on. That's where the problem with its data lies, right? Because theoretically autopilot is handling the easier miles, meaning that those miles that autopilot is accounting for would have statistically fewer crashes anyway because of the circumstances in which it's being used. Setting that aside though for a second, or not even setting that aside, but just considering the entirety of the data that we have here, Tesla up until the first quarter of 2021 used to report basically all circumstances. So autopilot being on, autopilot being off, but active safety features being on, or autopilot being off, and active safety features being off. And you can see that all of these, the crashes per million of miles, per millions of miles were lower, or sorry, were higher, no, lower, the frequency was lower than the average in the United States, which is one accident roughly every 500,000 miles. So no matter how you slice it, Tesla's on average getting in less accidents. However, of course, we don't know what's causing that, if that's autopilot or if it's, you know, Tesla's demographic, the vehicles being newer, all of these things will influence rates of accident. But if we kind of go back to what we're apparently going to be getting here from NHTSA, and we're talking about crashes per 1,000 vehicles, that's an even worse metric than anything that we're talking about here, because it doesn't take into account any sort of frequency. Like, if no one is ever using GM Super Cruise, then of course there's not going to be any crashes reported on it. However, that doesn't make that system safer, because if autopilot is handling those miles and still getting in a lot of accidents, but getting in fewer accidents than those vehicles would have gotten in otherwise, potentially, then this data would look bad that NHTSA is going to show us. However, it would be a net win for safety. So the point isn't to try to like defend Tesla on this, or to try to, you know, counteract anything that NHTSA is going to be publishing here. It's just in defense of Tesla. It's really just trying to point out that this data by itself is basically entirely useless, because it all depends on frequency of usage and what the rate of accident would be under those circumstances without these systems. And crash rate per 1,000 vehicles tells us nothing about that. So NHTSA's apparently been collecting a lot of information for, you know, the last year or so when we kind of first talked about them beginning this investigation. I would hope that they would have come up with a little bit better data than this, which again is really meaningless. But as far as we know here from this Associated Press report, that does not seem to be the case at this point in time. I think one of the problems with that is that Tesla would be one of the only automakers that's able to collect sort of that type of valuable information. You know, GM Super Cruise, I'm not sure that they're able to necessarily even know if their vehicles have been in a crash while on Super Cruise to the degree that Tesla could. So again, this data isn't really all that important, but it's extremely possible that the crashes could be underreported for these other automakers when we're looking at a comparison. So if NHTSA does go ahead and publish this, it does seem to me as though that would be targeting Tesla, because again, this data isn't really all that meaningful. If they publish this, they should obviously be aware of that fact. It's not a difficult concept. If they go through with publishing this, it definitely seems to be something that they would be doing tactically to target Tesla and to kind of attack Tesla and autopilot. So we'll see what happens in the coming days here, but I'm definitely not encouraged by this. Again, I have no problem with NHTSA investigating these things. They should be. There should be a heavier focus on Tesla because Tesla's on the leading edge of it. But when they, you know, if they potentially do this, that would be a very discouraging sign. So hopefully that makes sense, and we'll see what comes of that. All right, next up today, we do have a new portion of the Elon Musk interview shared out by Tesla owner Silicon Valley. So we talked, I think, a week or two, week and a half maybe, when this part one had come out. This time I did have a chance to watch this today. I had enough time. And I would say there were probably three main takeaways for me, and then a fourth that I'll hopefully remember to add on at the end. But let's see if I can get my setup working here, because I did want to pull up a couple of quotes, and we'll see if that works out. So hopefully you guys can see that. It says on screen here, this is a quote from Elon. He's talking about how difficult it is to start, you know, new automakers or a new auto company. He says that, quote, unless something changes significantly with Rivian and Lucid, they will both go bankrupt, end quote. So there he's talking about the challenges just in general and talked about how difficult it was for Tesla to get where they are. We've talked about this concept a lot, that new automakers have to compete with Tesla. Tesla didn't have that tremendous competition to deal with in the electric vehicle space like these newcomers do. And Elon again brought up a point that he mentioned on the Third Row podcast many years ago, or a couple years ago, that for new automakers, they're not going to be able to make any money from off-warranty vehicles for many years, and that's a significant driver of profitability for established automakers, which allows them to sell their vehicles, their new vehicles, at lower prices. So if you're a new automaker, you have to compete with those sort of artificially deflated new vehicle prices, because automakers are able to make money off of that, versus as a new automaker, you're not able to. So Tesla had to compete with that. Tesla finally just now kind of coming out of that stage in any sort of real volume way. But for Rivian and Lucid, it's going to be a long, long time before they kind of get into that situation. So Elon talking about that, obviously saying that his advice to those companies would be to, you know, cut costs as significantly as possible. So that was one. On a more Tesla-related note, Elon did talk about the interface of the vehicles. So we've talked a little bit about this with the new version of the UI. He said, quote, we definitely need to work on the overall interface in the car. There's a lot of complaints on the interface. He talked about how the browser was not a strong browser. So it's not like Elon's not aware of those things. He does feel like there's areas for improvement, opportunities for improvement there. So I think that's good that, you know, Elon is recognizing that, reacting to the feedback that Tesla has gotten. I don't think this is like a devastatingly terrible user interface or anything like that, but as we've talked about, I do think there are some areas for opportunities for improvement there. So good to see that being recognized. And then Elon did also talk a little bit about FSD and had an interesting quote here, basically saying that FSD is the difference between Tesla being worth a lot of money or basically worth zero. I don't necessarily agree with that. Tesla's got really strong margins, even accounting for very little profitability from autopilot FSD beta right now. You could argue that over time, that's, you know, sort of competitive advantage that allows for high margins would decline, and I think I would agree with that. However, there's still, I think, a lot of value within the core automotive business, especially as it looks like a very challenging task for these other automakers to be able to compete with where Tesla is at today. But did want to at least pass along that quote, as it was, you know, quite an interesting one from Elon. The other thing that I'll just add, so that's sort of that like fourth and final point, I think a lot of people, especially lately, have really just been kind of following Elon on Twitter. And if you have been following Elon on Twitter for a long time, and maybe you used to listen to interviews and kind of stopped listening to them more recently and just kind of feel like you've heard a lot of the stuff, because to be fair, a lot of us have heard some of this stuff, like the history of Tesla. It's been discussed, you know, on other occasions. I would just say take like half an hour, watch it on like 2x speed, watch this interview with Elon. Understand that Elon is a different person than what you see on Twitter. I think Elon could do a better job of getting that to cut through on Twitter, but I think it's just a good reminder of the type of person that Elon actually is sometimes, if you've been kind of, you know, disassociated with that or whatever for a period of time. I would just say, you know, spend some time, watch this interview. The clarity of thought is very high for Elon, obviously, and I just think that, you know, cuts through a lot better in an interview format, especially one like this, where he's obviously very relaxed, obviously, you know, interested in the topics being discussed and wants to share. So Even if you feel like you've heard some of these things before, I would definitely recommend checking it out. All right, getting into some of the other news for today, we do have an update here from Drive Tesla Canada that Tesla has started to build the first Model Ys with single-piece front casting, rear casting, of course, as well, and structural packs at Giga Berlin, according to a source familiar with this process, they say. Three test vehicles were built on a new secondary body line within the last week. They did not yet have a machine. They don't yet have a machine to create the front castings at Giga Berlin, so those had to be shipped from Giga Texas. And as for the 4680s, they don't have those cells there either. So what they've been doing is just for this test process using dummy material inside to mimic those cells. So this is really just testing out the process, very early stage, not as though 4680 vehicles at Giga Berlin are going to be in production next week or something like that. That's not the case. But it is exciting to see Tesla, you know, start the process of hopefully getting what they're doing in Texas ramped up in Giga Berlin relatively soon as well. All right, next here we've got news on supercharging. So Thomas Freres, should have looked at that before I went live on this, but somebody here reporting that Tesla has actually opened up the third-party charging in Germany now. So we've seen them testing this in various countries in the EU, and now adding Germany, obviously one of the more supercharger-heavy countries there. So pretty big step. Looks like this is just one location so far. I looked on Tesla's website and they haven't updated that yet to announce that Germany has been added to this, but it'll be interesting to watch that. And it looks like that third-party supercharging expansion continues. Next here, just a quick note on Tesla China. So this was reported by Dekirk today, saying that the insured units as of June 12th for made in China vehicles was about 18,000. I think that's, yeah, June 12th, okay. So I saw some extrapolation of this today, you know, trying to work this into production. I wouldn't do that because obviously there's some lag time between when Tesla produces a vehicle and when it ends up getting insured. So it's not like we can just take this and extrapolate it out for the rest of the month and get to production or anything like that. So I wouldn't read too much into this, you know, either way. Just wanted to kind of share my thoughts on that. And then we've got a quick update here on Tesla in India. We had talked about how Tesla was, you know, reducing their efforts there after a long period of negotiating in terms of reducing import tariffs on electric vehicles. They've reassigned some workers, and now we've got a report from Reuters today that one of Tesla's key executives there who had been a part of those lobbying efforts has resigned. So just another, you know, sign that Tesla is winding down their efforts there to get India to, you know, adjust their, you know, political structuring to, or the regulations to facilitate the adoption of EVs. Obviously, Tesla would need lower imports to sort of establish a business in India before they would feel comfortable, you know, building anything in the country. All right, last couple of items here. So CNBC reporting that Elon Musk is expected to be speaking to Twitter employees later this week at an all-hand meetings for that company. Apparently that meeting is scheduled for Thursday. So Musk will take questions from Twitter employees. I'm sure we'll get some reports out of that. Probably not the least leaky thing to occur. So I'm sure there will be some interesting things out of that on Thursday. I would expect Elon to be pretty positive and just talk about how much potential that he feels that there is. But that, you know, there needs to be some significant changes with the company. So we'll see what comes out of that. And then we've also got an update here on Ford. So Ford has instructed their dealers to temporarily stop selling the Mustang Mach-E, and they're also recalling about 50,000 of the roughly 100,000 Mach-Es that have been produced so far due to overheating of the vehicle's high voltage battery main connectors. So we'll see. That seems like a known issue that they can get resolved. Hopefully they'll figure that out and get it resolved pretty soon. But obviously a pretty significant issue if they are halting sales in the meantime. So we'll see what comes of that. And then last item for today, GM has unveiled one photo of their next electric vehicle. This is the Chevy Blazer EV, which is set to start shipping in spring of 2023. They are going to be releasing more details on this in July, on July 18th. So nothing new in terms of like the range being announced or anything like that. It's not a vehicle I'm particularly excited about because it's going to still use the Ultium packs, which as far as the, you know, limited insight that we've got on those packs so far have not seemed to be much of a next step. But we'll see. More info on that in July. All right, I think that will wrap it up for today then. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Wednesday, June 15th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.